Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to XYZ, the podcast about CNC, automation, technology, and more. Today's the first episode that I'm doing with my own recording setup and with a new co-host, so please excuse the audio quality while we get this thing worked out. My name's Aaron Goff. I'm the owner of Goff Custom, and I'm joined today by Nick Frank of the Frank Brothers Guitar Company. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome, mate. And you and I go back a long time, eh? Like, I was thinking about that the other day. I've got a picture on my fridge, a Polaroid picture of you and Tim and I being dicks in the shared basement workshop that we used to work in.
Oh, my God. Yeah, those are good times, though.
Yeah, seriously. A lot of really cheap wine was consumed.
Yes. Yeah. Good thing that wine store was so close.
Right. So why don't you tell us a little bit, like, for, you know, the people that aren't familiar with you guys and what you do, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. Yeah. Well, Frank Brothers Guitar Company is we manufacture our own brand, our own design of electric guitars, founded by myself and Tim, and our older brother, John, and a good friend, Warren, who is in the lumber industry. And in the shop, it's Tim and I. We design and manufacture the instruments, and we have a small growing team here, and we're in a 2,800 square foot space in the east end of Toronto, and we use CNC, we use traditional woodworking equipment, and we do all our own finishing, and we even do some parts manufacturing for our instruments. So we've been at it since 2014, and well beyond before that, when you and I and Tim worked at that shared shop box. What was the number?
Box 47.
Box 47.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy that that was so long ago.
I know.
Like, yeah, man. Jeez.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people listening to this have not seen Tim and Nick's guitars, like, if you haven't seen Frank Brothers Guitar Company guitars, you have to go and check them out. I've plugged you guys on the show before.
I know. I've listened. Yeah. I've heard you chirp me
make
before.
Beautiful shit. Yeah. Can't let you get away free, you know? Now, a little birdie told me that you took delivery of some pretty exciting shit this week.
We did. Well, it was two weeks ago now.
Oh, pedantic.
It already feels like forever ago.
Is it up and running yet?
No. So we took delivery of a Haas VF2 SSYT. Yeah. We've been interested in getting a VMC since we got into CNC. We didn't end up getting a VMC. We went with something more affordable, a little more entry level at the time. Still a really good machine. We got an Axis, AXYZ, gantry style router. And it's been really good
test. A little bit more affordable. Like, I remember having some pucker factor when you told me the price on that originally. I can't remember how much that was, though.
I think it was about 60 Canadian. So definitely not a cheap machine.
$60?
Yeah. Still paying it off.
Yeah. Yeah. A dollar a month or?
Yeah, exactly. No, it was $60,000 Canadian. That was huge. That was a big deal for us at the time, especially because I've never touched a CNC before.
Well, it's just funny because you said, you know, we've always wanted a VMC, but we had to go with something more affordable. And, like, yeah. I don't know, 60K to me feels like almost VMC territory.
Well, you know, they don't make VMCs in Canada. So they're always priced in US dollars or some other currency, right? You could get a VMC probably for 60 grand US, or you could buy used. You know,
I know that story.
But no, brand new. We had this Axies 5x4 table gantry style router, CNC router. Right. Brand new. It's been really good. You know, we've had some crazy weird issues with it, like you probably would have any machine. I wanted a VMC because I thought they were cooler. And they are. Yeah,
they are cool. They're kind of terrifying.
Yes, they're big and heavy. And
did you guys have to like talk to your landlord to find out whether your concrete floor was thick enough to support that machine?
No, I just drilled a hole in it.
Oh, just to like see how deep it was?
Yeah, I got 6 inches and I stopped. Yeah, it's sitting on some cracks, so that's a little scary.
Perfect. That's perfect. You'll find out pretty soon whether there's a sinkhole under the building.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Well, so we, I just have a level sitting on top of the machine. I just check it every day. It sounds sketchy.
If you start hearing like a little creaking.
Yeah. So, we were taking delivery of it and we cleared out the whole space. We had our table saw sitting on top of where the CNC is now. So I was always like, well, I see the cracks, but what's the big deal? But I bought these skates, like these machinery moving dolly skates move some other equipment around. And I'd heard that if you roll a skate around on the floor, you can kind of hear if there's a noise difference. Like you can hear if maybe there's a hollow. And I started rolling it around after moving the table saw, made space for the CNC. I kind of heard something and I was like panicking, freaking out. And luckily a good friend of ours was here and she was like, I know a concrete engineer. Let me call him. So she called him and she got him on the line. This like concrete engineer. I was just telling him about the situation. He asked me a bunch of crazy questions, did like some calculus or some bullshit or whatever. And it was like, if there's a steel, like a metal shop metal supplier near you, go get 2 1-inch thick, 6-inch by 6-inch wide or square sheet, like steel plates, and put those under the feet and you should be all right.
Wow. And that was it?
That was it. I mean, he was like, I don't know for sure. Like you've got cracks in your floor. So I did. The guys were moving the CNC at the time. They like were taking it off the truck. I had parked my car on the street, so I was still able to get in because we're on car law, like you. And this is, you know, I would call it downtown Toronto. It's East End Toronto, but it's car law is a busy street. And these guys just had a full size tractor trailer, open top tractor trailer, and they're just blocking traffic.
They're just like loading it off the street with the forklift?
Yep.
Wow.
So I zipped out and grabbed these four pieces of steel and I actually went bigger than what he had suggested because that's what they had and just got back as they were putting the machine down. We just slipped them under the feet. It hasn't moved yet.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
If you hear the creaking, just get out of the way, you know?
Yeah. I know. It's like, because the cracks are right at the front left, right where like the operator stands. So if it falls over, it's going to fall right on me.
Right on. Man, moving machinery is always a bit terrifying. Like in the building that I'm in now, so they didn't send, the riggers didn't send someone out to, you know, survey the land before because I just kind of send them some photos and they're like, oh, that's fine. And then when they get there, the guy starts telling me a different story. He's like, well, we can't park on the street because we're not legally allowed to drive a forklift across the sidewalk. And I was like, okay.
Interesting.
Well, that's an issue. So where do you want to go? And he's like, well, let's go in the loading dock. And I was like, okay, but the problem is between the loading dock and my unit, there's this pit in the that crosses the corridor. And this pit, it's like an electrical pit or something, has been covered up by like a 1/4-inch thick steel plate that is like 8 feet wide.
Oh, good.
But it's anchored at the corners. Like it has these bolts that have been like drilled down into the concrete and then welded to this plate. This is a permanent installation. When you drive over it, the plate ends up being in tension, right? Because it's you know, the weight's in the middle and it's pulling on the anchors, trying to pull them into the middle. And the building was like, oh, yeah, it'll be fine. We had like a 25,000-pound forklift on that thing. No problems at all. And I was like, okay. So I tell the riggers that, and they're like, eh. And So they put my machine on the forklift. The forklift weighs like 15,000 pounds, 16,000 pounds. And they start driving onto the plate. And all the other riggers, except for the forklift driver, just kind of take a step back and like... And the forklift driver is just kind of raising his eyes, driving real slowly onto this plate. And then as soon as the weight got on there and he didn't fall in, he was like, he just gunned it. And
I was like, nice.
Jesus Christ.
Steel is very strong, as you know.
Yeah, but you know, pretty wild. What the hell is it attached to?
No, yeah, you're right. Like the concrete's just going to give way.
Yeah.
Wow, that
I guess those guys deal with that kind of shit all the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think our move was ended up being super easy for them, but you know, like, these guys are delivering 15,000-pound machines in the middle of winter on like 60-degree slopes, and you know,
yeah, it's a bit terrifying. I don't know.
Yeah,
I would definitely lose a finger being a rigger or a foot or something.
They're so chill about it too.
I think honestly, you just get exposed to that level of like craziness every day, and you get to learn what stuff's gonna work and what stuff doesn't, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and like the yours is probably a small machine for them. Ours was a small machine for them.
Yeah, mine's only 5,500.
5,500 pounds.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, about ours, I think ours is like 6 or 7.
No, the VF. What you said, VF2, right?
The YT.
Oh yeah, maybe. I thought it was like 10.
No.
Oh, wow.
But the VF3, which would be 40 by 20, like yours, is like 13,000. So I don't know.
Right. No, my machine isn't that big, unfortunately. My machine's only 20 by 16.
You know. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought you had the classic. Like, isn't that the classic Fidal is like the 40 by 20? The 30?
Yes.
Yeah, 40 by 20. Yeah.
40-20, yeah.
40-20.
Yeah. So Nick's thinking that I have a different machine than I do because he doesn't pay attention to my life.
You're always zoomed in on your photos and your video.
Oh yeah. I'm pretty sure I sent you guys some links to Fidal 4020s because they would have been a great machine for you.
Yeah.
I would love one. It's just like my current shop only has double doors. Like I had to put both of my VMCs into the shop through like standard double doors.
Oh wow. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's a nice size machine for you though. What do you need a 40?
I would love a 40-20.
Axis.
I would love, because then I could fixture like multiple parts. So like, you know, two of this knife, two of that knife, whatever, and then leave them running unattended.
True. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Unfortunately, where my shop is right now. I actually have a neighbor that lives in his unit.
Oh, good.
The guy like right next to me. So literally 6 feet away from my VMC is the head of this guy's bed. So out of courtesy to him, I'm actually not running cycles overnight at the moment.
Really? What the hell is he doing living in there? That's the main floor.
He's been living in this building for like 20 something years, 25 years.
That's such a funny building. Wait, I thought you're not at the same place where we visited you many times.
No.
So no, you're in that building up the street.
Yeah.
I thought that building was less sketchy.
It is less sketchy.
So what's this guy doing living in?
I don't know, man.
Does he even have windows?
Nope.
No way.
And the front of his shop is like a welding shop, right? So he like...
Oh, you know, he's welds. The welder.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Okay, well, fine.
So he like welds, he fills his shop full of like spray paint and shit, and then he sleeps in there.
Okay. Well, that makes a little more sense. I was picturing some person like waking up in the morning, brushing their teeth, combing their hair, putting their suit and tie on, getting on the streetcar, going to work.
Right. No, he works and lives there.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that really does kind of suck for me, right? Because running unattended, I mean, you guys are going to find this out soon with the new machine, but running unattended is like money, you know?
Oh, it's definitely would be the best thing you could do. Yeah. But I mean, for us, I would love to run some things unattended, like fretboards or something we can fill the table out with. Bodies doesn't make sense. We're gonna run maybe two bodies at a time. The cycle time's just too short. But I mean, you could just leave it and then let it.
Yeah, and it's totally worth doing that. You know, if the cycle time's like an hour. Just like set it up, hit go before you leave for the night and then come back to the morning. Like that's an extra hour worth of machine time you get, right?
Yeah.
So are you super excited about the new machine? Like, when's it, is it, you said it's not up and running yet? What's the deal?
So it's the, come drop it off. And then I had the electricians come hook it up to power, which, you know, booking electricians was, they were busy and they didn't come when I asked them to. And yeah, anyways, they came, hooked it up to electrical. Now I need to run the air lines. Cause we also have a new air compressor.
Ooh, what did you get?
We got a Quincy, 7.5 horsepower screw compressor.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, it's not a, what's the other brand? What's yours?
Kaiser.
It's just the nicer one.
This is a German's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went with, made in Alabama, proudly made in Alabama. Although they're owned by us Costco, and I looked, like, I'm looking at a bunch of the components, and they're, a lot of them are made in Italy. So I don't know. Who knows? And it's got a, I think it's got a bigger tank than the Kaiser was going to have. Anyways, right. So we got that machine hooked up. Now I just need to run the airlines, which I'm planning to do tonight.
Nice.
And I've kept this, we have a piston compressor, just like, you know, we bought them in together. I still have Nick mine.
Nick and Tim and I all went to the same place and bought these big red piston compressors.
We bought matching compressors. It was adorable.
Yeah, it was cute. does yours, like, does the oil go black in yours pretty quick?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So which I found very distressing. And then we had it serviced recently because it was leaking oil.
Oh, okay.
And it was leaking oil out of where you put the oil in? Yeah. That's a cast plate, a cast iron plate. And there's a gasket around it, the plate where it attaches to the whole piston head. And you unscrew that cap and then you pour your oil in.
I've never done that. No, I'm fucking with you. But it was leaking there?
It was leaking around that gasket.
Right.
And so we were busy. I called Canbuilt and I was like, they gave me the name of a compressor repair service company. And so I called them, they came down and they replaced the gasket and then the thing kept leaking. And so I called them back and they came back. And what had happened is, now I don't know if it was me that did this or if it was him. When the cap was being put back on, it got tightened really tight and it cracked
the cast iron.
The whole cast iron bit. So then that whole thing had to be replaced. This is all right before I'm like, I know I'm buying a new compressor. So it's really frustrating to have to
sinking hundreds of bucks into something that's just going to be your backup compressor.
Exactly. It was really frustrating, but it did give me a bit of a sense of relief to just know that it's good again. Like he was like, oh, this thing, cause you know, this is a dusty shop and, which I'm going to have to do something about for the screw compressor cause they don't like dust. But, I just had this feeling that I wasn't taking care of the machine. Or it was like in poor condition, even though I've been changing the oil, I do like take relatively good care of it. I just assumed the worst. And he was like, ah, this thing's like brand new. It's perfect.
Right. So, yeah. I ended up selling my compressor to a guy for like $600.
Mm.
Yeah. He got a good deal.
I don't remember how much we paid for them. So
they were a couple of grand, like, two and a half or something.
Yeah, it's a good, it's like got a Baldor motor, it's the low RPM.
And you and I have both run the shit out of those things.
Oh, like, yeah, ours during the day, like if we're going full tilt, it's only off for 5 minutes at a time or less.
Yeah Maybe, well, when I was sandblasting with mine, sometimes run for like 3 hours straight.
Ooh, that's not great, eh? For a piston compressor.
No.
Yeah,
no.
That's what's nice about these continuous duty screw compressors.
Mm-hmm.
But also, one thing we ran into thinking about buying that is you kind of have to buy, you have to right size it. You can't overbuy.
Well, you know what? They say that, but like I overbought. Like my screws are 10 horsepower screw compressor. And most days it runs maybe 7 minutes per hour.
Yeah.
And that's okay, when so I'm there.
That might be better though than so like because they have that idle, maybe it's better that it's off for a significant portion versus being on, then off, then on, then off. You kind of, I think that you want it to run either continuous duty.
Yeah. So my compressor has this control on it, and I dug through the control manual because it was just idling way too much. Like it would idle like 10 minutes after running for two minutes,
yeah.
You know, so it would just be running like the whole hour, you know, it'd be running a full hour all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. But I'm only actually using it to compress air like 7 minutes an hour or something. So I found that there was like an idle timeout setting. And basically now it runs for like 5 minutes and then it'll idle for like a minute and then it'll shut itself down. But apparently the idling is not really so much to do with, so it's partly because of the screw. Like you don't want to start the screw too many times because it might be low on oil. So you might get like kind of contact if you're starting it too much. But then the other reason you don't want to start them all the time is because of the motor itself. Like
yeah.
The motors only have like a number of starts that they're rated for each hour.
Mm-hmm.
So by keeping it idling, you avoid that motor issue. But the control actually has this built-in thing where it knows that if it's starting too often, it'll just go back to the other control scheme where it keeps it idling.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so like when I'm sandblasting with it, it realizes that it's having to start too much and it just goes back to idling all the time rather than turning completely off. But like for in my shop, you know, like as I said, like when I'm running the VMCs, it's just like running air for the tool changes and stuff. So it's only running like, you know, 5 minutes an hour or something. For it to just be idling the rest of the time, it's just going to waste so much electricity and then I have to deal with the noise of it all the time and shit, you know?
Yeah. I think ours has a 5 minute idle. Right. But we bought like the piston compressor 17 CFM and this one is like 20-21 CFM. Right. So, but it can run continuous. So we didn't go too much higher. And then the Haas, I believe, I mean, we haven't used it yet. it has a solenoid. And it's only going to draw air when it needs to.
Right. And when you say draw air, that's for the spindle air curtain, right?
Well, yeah. I guess it'll have that on all the time, the air purge.
I think it should only run that when the spindle's running.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. And then for tool changing.
Right.
So whereas our Axis machine, I just turn the ball valve and it's just on.
Like for the spindle air purge. Just runs all the time?
I don't even know if it's for a spindle air purge.
But it's like hissing air around the bottom of the spindle, right?
Well, or I guess it's just leaking. Is.
It's a special leak.
Yeah. I mean, it's for the tool changing, definitely.
Right.
And it could
yeah,
be.
Yeah, so like
for the spindle.
For people
well.
That aren't familiar, the spindle air purge, basically you're pushing compressed air into the nose of the spindle. Kind of where the bearings are, so that there's actually a non-contact seal in the nose of the spindle, and in some cases you can get coolant or dust going back up inside the spindle, so having air just a little bit coming out constantly stops that from happening. Which I guess is super important for you in the VMC.
Well, it will be for sure, but I mean this thing, like I think they don't leak that, like if you put your hand on it you'd feel it, but the Axis is leaking like it's like 90 psi right. All the time, right?
Right.
So it's just not that smart a machine. Maybe it only needs like 5 psi for the air purge, the spindle purge, but it's just like
can you just chuck a regulator in line with the air supply for that thing?
Well, I have a regular. I'm regulating it down to 90. It needs 90.
Oh, regulate it down to 10.
But then it won't. Then the tool changer won't work.
Oh no! Sorry, I mean like split it. So split the airline so that there's a separate one for the spindle purge, and then regulate that down more.
I could get a whole new CNC and throw this one in the garbage.
Okay. So you've got the new Haas. But that's amazing. Everyone wants one of those. But let's talk about the old busted for a minute. You've got this CNC router that you clearly kind of hate because you want to throw it in the garbage.
Well, I hate it because I've used it for a long time. I also love it.
Okay. What do you love about it? What do you hate about it? What's the deal?
I like where it's gotten us. Right. You know, it's been good to us. What I don't like about it, okay, like these are things that I wouldn't have complained that I, these were are things that were like on the bonus or check the positive side of when we first got the machine. So right. It's got a tool changer. Great.
Okay.
But it only holds 7 tools.
Yes.
So that's my new qualm with it. Before I was like 7 tools, sick.
Right.
So it holds 7 tools in the carousel. We use 21-ish different tools.
Oh, that's a recipe for pain right there.
So I've got all these different tool sets. We have a tool set for doing bodies, a tool set for doing necks, tool set for doing – the neck needs actually 8 tools, so I need to swap it when we're doing a different portion of the neck. Then there's a tool set for doing like plastic components, a tool set for doing just miscellaneous, a couple different miscellaneous parts. Simon, who used to work with us, used to know the tool sets off by heart. He probably still does. Right. I just look at the chart. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I could tell you a couple of them, but anyways, it's just a lot.
Totally.
And to have to swap tools, it's like it's a now. Now you know you've got to swap tools. Now I've got to touch them off again. Mm.
Because it can only remember the 6. Like 7. When you change them out, it's like, 7. It reassigns the numbers like 1 through 7.
Yeah. So if I were to swap, like say in position 2, I've got a 1/4 inch diameter end mill that's got a stick out length of, 2 inches. And then I put my 1/2 inch ball nose with a stick out of 4 inches, like it's
going to
think.
Yeah. One nice thing with.
Unless I touch it off again, it's going to think it's got a 2-inch long bit in it.
Yes, I understand that, Nick. God.
Do I have to spell everything out for you?
Yeah, I know. Fuck. One nice thing about the Fidal control is, like, even though my machine only has 21 tools, I can actually store diameter and length offsets for 99 tools in the control.
Yeah, that's nice.
And then, anything above 21, it just knows that you have to automatically... It automatically knows that you have to change them out by hand, which is really nice.
Oh, that's good.
And then the other thing you can do is actually, maybe you can do this with the Axis machine. I don't know. Like, I can actually dump the tool table. So if I had, like, one set of 21 tools for doing one thing and then a different set of 21 tools for doing a different thing, I can, like, dump the tool table, pull all the tools out, put the other tools in, and then reload the other tool table rather than having to remeasure everything.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'd feel pretty dumb if we were able to do that on this machine and I hadn't yet.
How many years have you had it for?
Probably 5.
Yeah. You'll probably find out that you can. No, I don't know.
So there's that. At least I still have to change the tools. So the Haas has 30 in the side mount tool changer.
And, one thing that I always talk to people about when they're getting into CNC is like, people will be like, I don't really need a tool changer. And it's just like, that's one of those things you only say before you've had a tool changer.
Oh, yeah. I would never go to not have a tool changer. It's like, I remember when we were looking at machines, because we looked at a whole range of them, that you went from having to, use wrenches to change the tool out. To then having like a button, and you could press the button and load the tool. To then having tool changer, and then there was ours is a rotary style tool changer, which is really nice. Versus it going to the back of a machine. A lot of the gantry style routers have the tooling just at the back of the machine. It goes it jogs over and goes down and picks it up.
The wine rack style tool changes.
Yeah. This is a carousel, which is nice. But the other qualm with the machine, just like this stuff didn't matter before, but now we're trying to, speed up our cycle times. And when I'm all the way in to one side of the machine and the tool changer is all the way on the other, and it's got to go change a tool. It could take like 30 seconds to change a tool.
Yeah, but I guess the alternative is you have to stand there and change it faster than 30 seconds.
Yeah, well, I just mean compared to like what the Haas is going to be able to do is like.
Oh, you're just going to lord it over this over us with this Haas.
You have a fast tool changer?
No, I don't. The Fidel tool changers are slow, man.
Are they?
Yeah, because it's not like a servo driven turret. It's a what's called a Geneva wheel, so it has to like rotate one tool at a time. So it goes like chukunk, chukunk, chukunk. You know, so if you're on the opposite side of the turret, it has to do 10 chukunks before it gets there,
and it won't chukunk in advance. Like if it knows it's going to
No, because it's so with and the tool changer in the Haas, all it does is swap the two tools, and then it kind of keeps track of where it's putting them.
Right.
With the umbrella style, it's the same as with your CNC router, where it always has to put the tool back in the same slot.
Right.
So it can't go to the other side first, unfortunately.
Right.
But yeah, like I don't care. Like, yeah, it's pretty rare that I would like stand there and watch it change tools. You know.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I'm doing something else, and that's like the magic of the tool changer.
Yeah, tool changers are magic.
They are.
And probably the coolest thing to watch when you first get into it.
The dual arm style, so the ones where it changes the tool in one motion, like on your Haas, are kind of terrifying because they're whipping a, you know, 6-pound steel tool holder kind of at you really fast. You're like, oh, that thing better not come out.
Yeah, and you have to like tell it if it's picking up like a big tool. If you have a 3-inch shell mill in there,
don't want to forget.
No, but yeah, no, we're excited about it.
I bet. So you said there was a couple of things that bugged you with the old machine. What are the other ones?
Okay, so
I'm just curious because I think it's a learning experience for people that are like looking at a new machine. To find out, you know, what things bug the shit out of people that have had a machine for a while.
Yeah. And mine are all based around the operator. You know, like, because I'm not doing the programming. But so I don't know if what annoying things there are posting code to this machine, or considerations around that. But yeah, operating it, there's those things, and then what else? There's okay.
Well, so the other one, so not to interject, but I you know from having previous conversations with you, I know that you said that it doesn't repeat the home position very reliably.
Oh yeah, I mean, so we were having a problem before. When we bought the machine, it had this feature called auto squaring, which sounds great. So what would happen is when it's jogging to home the machine, you've got the two you've got a gantry, right? There's the two like posts.
Yeah, like the left and right side of the gantry.
Yeah. And the machine would jog up, touch the the limit switches.
Yeah.
And then it would take the left side of the machine and touch the limit switch, and then the right side of the machine and touch the limit switch.
Okay.
When the right side's touching, the left side's static, stationary. Right. So it's just kind of twists
the gantry. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it just kept getting worse and worse, and would like twist even more and more. And by the end, it was like it would like take 10 seconds for the right side to touch when at first it only took one second. It was
really?
It was having to go so much further. It was just twisting itself out of. And then this is when we realized that was the issue. It was like 2 or 3 years in. We realized that was compounding. That was becoming an issue. We'd never even thought about it before. We thought auto squaring, great, squaring itself.
But it's actually like twisting itself to death.
Oh, it was ruining itself. Yeah.
Right. That's interesting.
And I called them, the service line. I'm not going to chirp Axis, but they to even just get a service person on the phone, you've got to pay money.
Yeah, you have to buy a ticket. It's not that unusual.
Right. Yeah. So I buy a ticket and I talk to a service person. He's like, oh, well, yeah, you have to turn auto squaring off. Duh. And I was like, what?
What?
He was like, yeah. Oh, we've been we haven't shipped a machine out in like a year with that turned on. I was like, why didn't you email every single person that owns one of these and tell them this?
Right.
This is a huge problem for me. But the thing about these machines is, you know, they're not made for what we do. We're pushing it to its limit to, you know, they're not made for precision. They are reasonably precise and we've been able to get really good precision out of it. But that's not really I don't think that that's really the market is high precision.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that really interested me when you said that was, you know, you were like, oh, you know, some days it'll be out of position when you home it by like 5/1000. And to me, that would be like, holy shit, like I need to like tear this machine down. But then I was thinking about it afterwards and I was like, I have no idea where 5/1000 error would show up for you on a guitar. Like where did that manifest itself?
Well, so, you know, we do our binding. So the body binding, I'll have to start from the beginning because the way we build the guitars is kind of funky if you compare it to traditional guitar building. Yeah, right. So traditionally for making a solid body electric guitar, you have your body shape. You take your block of wood, maybe you thickness it, right? You get it level, you surface one side and then you plane it to like 1 3/4 inch if we're talking about like a Telecaster, let's say. Then you cut the body shape out. Right. Then if you wanted to bind it, you would route a rabbet into the body, a channel where you would install whatever binding, let's say like, you know, 60 thou wide white ABS.
And that's an open channel, right? It's kind of like an inside fillet or inside chamfer. So you're like pushing the ABS in there and then taping it down all the way around the
exactly.
body.
Exactly. Right? You've got your body is cut out already. You just route a channel around the edge of it. And that is a relief for where you put the binding in. And then you flush the binding up by sanding it or scraping it so that it's flush to the body. The way we do it is we have our body blank. We don't cut the shape of the body out. We just put it right on the CNC as a body blank. Then we surface it on one side. It's already been jointed and surfaced on the other side, the bottom. Right. We surface the top. Then we route the body arch because our guitars have an arch in the top and back. We arch
the
top.
So you're doing like a 3D contouring toolpath for that.
Yeah, 3D contoured top arch. And then we take it off. We glue a top to that. So we glue an 1/8 inch thick piece of maple, let's say. That's the most common piece of wood. To that, and that contours to the arch. Then we put it back in the machine. We route in a slot, a channel for the binding in the shape of the body.
Right.
Then we inlay the plastic.
Right. So the channel itself is actually forming like a fixture to hold the binding in place rather
exactly.
than to like tape it down. Right.
Exactly. Then a lot of our guitars have binding on the back as well. So now what you've got to do is flip the guitar, do the exact same thing to the back.
Right.
Where we found the tolerance issue is in that flip operation or just in general. Like say you've installed all the binding, then you power the machine down, you do your other stuff, you install you've got to make the neck, you install the neck into the body. Then you go to cut the guitar out of the guitar body shape out, which is another weird thing that we do. We install the body into that big block of wood that has what looks like a guitar somewhere inside of it.
Right.
And then we
then
cut,
you cut
it
away
out.
Everything that isn't a guitar.
Exactly. And
yeah,
if your machine has lost tolerance over that time where you've been building this guitar, because you've got glue up time. Like glue's got a set, you've got a few different parts to make, and it could be 3 days before you're cutting that body out. And if the machine is like in a different place than it was when you installed the binding, you're going to cut into that binding. So maybe, you know, if the machine's 5 thou out, your binding's going to be not the same thickness all the way around the shape of the body.
Right.
It'll be,
it's crazy,
90 thou.
You know, I had a pair of calipers and I was like, oh, you know, like looking at 5 thou, I was like, that's not a lot. Like, I'm not sure I would notice that.
Well,
you know, there's a thin bit in the binding.
Yeah. Like, and you might not, and nobody's pulling out, especially when you've
got you guys do.
Yeah, we want it to be right.
Yeah.
And then you've got other things. You've got internal structure in the guitar.
Yeah.
That if you're just out of place now, the, you know, like the center line. So like we're using a book matched piece of curly maple, for example, or koa. We've put that book match.
We should stop
for
a second because we have to make sure we explain things as we go. I know what book matching is, but machinists and, you know, 3D printing guys may have no idea what book matching is. So what the hell is book matching?
Book matching. So you take a piece of wood and you cut it right down the middle. This is really simplifying it. And then you open that up like you were to open a book. The grain should match. The right side of the piece of wood and the left side of the piece of wood should match, should be
like
sort of like
image, right?
A mirror image of each other. Now, that works best when you're using like a quarter sawn piece of wood. So quarter sawn wood is, if you look at the end grain of it, the grain is completely 90 degrees to the surface. Parallel to the center of it. So splitting that piece of wood, when you open it up, you don't have a big difference between the right side and the left side. They're very well matched, because the grain was so close to each other before
right.
Split it open. I don't know
but
if that's a good description.
You could,
but...
No, I think it's fine. I mean, yeah, people
Google
can Google it if that's not enough. Yeah, exactly. But you're telling me that you could put like a book matched, like top on a guitar and then see the center line not lining up.
You could.
With like the fretboard or something.
Potentially.
But I'm kind of curious, like how much was it off? Like I thought it was only like 5 thou, 10 thou or something.
Yeah.
And, oh man. You see, you guys, you're like me. Like I look at a knife and I see like a tiniest little spot. I'm like, no, I'm not sending it out. And then I show it to someone else and they're like, what are you talking about? What spot?
Right. Exactly. I mean, yeah. This is the problem. And you like us, we sort of like figured the stuff out all on our own. Right. The challenge doing that is you have zero knowledge of what a tolerance range, what's a reasonable tolerance range. So you just go for the best thing possible. When we first started, one example is people would always be like, oh, your neck should be dead straight. So they would always keep saying shit like dead flat, dead straight.
But what does that mean?
What does that mean? How is that?
It totally
what
means
measurement. Yeah, yeah. What tolerance is that? Dead straight. So we would be like.
Because if you say that to a machinist, it's like, okay, like is that like 2/10 over 6 feet? Like that's
right.
That's impossible. Like what does that mean? You know?
Yeah. So we bought machinist tooling. Like we bought like straight edges, like proper starrett straight edges. We have, I'm totally blanking on this, feeler gauges. So to measure flatness or straightness, we'd be using a machinist straight edge and feeler gauges and be like, oh, this is a thou out. Better, you know, do some more work.
And then you look at another guitar maker and they're like using some 2x4 they found in a pile.
yeah, like a level from Home Depot.
Right.
So that's just how we developed. And we've been, you know, we're chasing these tolerances, these really tight tolerances for woodworking, really tight tolerances.
Yeah, no, totally.
Like to within 3 thou. 3 thou is kind of what we call our tolerance range. But yeah, so it's just annoying when you've put all this work into something and you've got your binding is out 10 thou.
Yeah, I know. And then you look at it and you can see it and you know rationally in your mind that no customer will ever see that. But you look at it and you can see it and yeah, I get it.
Yeah, maybe now I know that rationally, but I didn't. You know, I just assumed everyone saw these little glaring details. Some people do. We have really discerning customers.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And it is hard to work out where the line is because if you go too far, then you're just doing work that none of your customers will ever see or appreciate and charging them for it.
Right. That is a good point.
Yeah. But if you don't go far enough, then you get people being like, what the hell is this piece of crap? You know? So yeah, I get it. Plus there's the perfectionist nature of us. I know what you guys are like.
Yeah, it's not always beneficial, for sure.
No, there are times where it's too far.
Totally. But I think what our customers see and what people who desire our guitars see, similar to the same people who buy or desire your knives, is they can tell the attention to detail and the quality just from looking at a photo. Because if you're not willing to let those little things slip, they're sure as hell not going to let the big things slip.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%, man. Oh, I get it. So, like, what are you looking forward to most with the Haas? So you've gone from this CNC router that you kind of hate love to the new shininess that is this Haas. Like,
well,
by the way, can I come and hug it? Like, oh, I just want to come and like,
no,
just
God,
like
no.
Rub myself against it. Is that okay?
No.
Oh, fuck. All right.
You can see it from the window in the door.
Oh yeah. It's okay. So hang on a second. I've never asked you this, but am I going to get to run this machine? Like, do I get to run some test parts on it?
Yeah, you can come play with it for sure.
Oh, sweet. Because I talked to the Haas salesman. I was like, can you guys run some parts for me? Like, I just want to see what the surface finish is like. And he was like, no.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said, like, go, maybe Nick will let you run some parts. And I was like,
you talked to him, man? You talked to him recently?
Yeah, when you were buying your machine.
Ah, that's jokes. Fabrizio, he's a great guy.
Yeah, he seemed nice, but like I was, you know, I really want to see, like, you know, what is, so if I take like a hardened block of steel and I machine, and, you know, a knife shaped object into the top of it with the bevel and all that kind of stuff, you know, what is that? That's very easy because it just, you hold it in a vise and you can just machine it all in one shot. What does that look like on a Haas versus on my Fidals? You know, I'd really like to answer that question. Is it worth me spending, you know, $100,000 on a Haas to, is it a step up, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
And when I asked Haas about doing that, they were just like, nah.
That's crazy. I would have assumed they for sure would have let you run some parts.
Yeah, I was super surprised. But.
Have you looked into other, like, machine, like, are you interested in a new machine?
Yes and no. Like, I think in my current shop is probably not the right space. I've only got, like, 500 square feet at the moment, right? So I would be making compromises on the machine that I'm buying to fit it in the space, which I think is the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, well, could you fit like a robo drill in there?
Yeah.
Would that be good?
Totally.
Would that work for you?
You know what? There's an Australian knife maker, 5050 Knives, and he was using a couple of machines with BT30 spindles, like a robo drill.
Yeah.
And he was very happy with them. He was like shredding hardened steel.
If you go like HSK.
right. Yeah, so like HSK is this other type of spindle of like tool holder design that's crazy, especially for high speed machining. It's interesting though, Haas actually offer HSK spindles now.
They do, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, you know, one of their DT machines or their DM machines, I don't know, man. I think that ultimately I'm just gonna wait until I move outside the city, you know, have a big shop.
Yeah. Back to Scarborough.
No, thank you. Further out than that.
But I mean, okay, so I think just so when they came to set up the axes, we really recently I crashed it. I when I was moving the gantry and I had a chisel laying across the table in between one of my fixtures and the post of the gantry, and it just like ran into it and just like basically auto squared itself out of square. And so I call them and I was like, we've been squaring the machine up. Like Mark comes by and like we square the machine up. Mark works with us. Just to give a disclaimer on Mark, he does all our programming and he's a genius and we work really close with him. I tell people you're a genius too, Aaron. Don't worry. And anyway, so we know how to square the machine up because we've had to do it before. But I was like,
because you're always crashing it.
Yeah, we've only crashed it maybe once.
Badly. That's not bad. That's not bad. Everyone crashes. You know, that's one of the things that I like about like Haas or Fidal. Like, if you crash it, you can get a new spindle for like $4,000. You know, like,
oh, good, yeah.
Yeah, some of the machines that I've looked at, like the one of my ultimate machines would be the Okuma Genos M560V, but the spindle cartridge in that thing is like $20,000.
Oh my god! But it's probably stout as fuck.
Yeah, I think it's a ceramic bearing spindle though, because I think so. Yeah, they're strong for what they are, but like if you crash one, you could like fuck your bearings up, and then it's
you're not meant. You're not meant to crash it. Yeah.
No. Ideally, you wouldn't crash any machine.
Right? Yes. So you could bump it, maybe.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we did. I mean, we just had our offset was wrong, and it just like drove a half inch single flute end mill straight through one of our fixtures.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. And I've also like, it's got this stupid function where, okay, so the same button that changes the jog speed, if you're in the middle of a program, if you press that button, it skips steps. It goes to the next step.
Program. That's an incredibly dangerous button.
So
why would they include that?
It's the worst design choice. So I've done that before, where I paused the program, and then I want to jog the machine up, because sometimes when you pause it, it just pauses right in place. It doesn't jog the spindle up, and I go to press speed because I'm like in step mode, like one thou. And I go to press speed, and it moves it to the next thing, and just like jogs the machine with the router bit plunged, you know.
Right.
I'm like, oh my god. So, anyways, when I called Axies to get their help squaring the machine up, because I was like, this is their fault. Like we, you know, they're like they owe me. Rather, they owe me for this like auto squaring disaster.
Thing. Yeah.
So right. I call them. And he's like, okay, it took me forever to get somebody to call me back, and I had to pay like $100. Whatever, that aside. The guy calls me, and he's like, all right, okay, I need you to grab like a pencil and a pad of paper and a measure or a tape measure. And I was like, okay. Cool, what's the tape measure for?
Measure?
Yeah. He's like, that's what we're gonna use to square the machine up. Like you. And I was like, he's like, you move, you know how you like measure a TV across the screen?
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted me to like mark
diagonally
the center.
Corner
to corner. He wanted me to mark the center and then the other center and then like jog the machine over to it or something. I was like, that can't be accurate. He was like, it's very accurate. I was like, it's impossible for that to be accurate. It's a tape measure. Like I could mark on this. How close to the center of the line and the tape do I go?
Yeah, yeah. But was it machinist's tape measure or was it just a regular carpenter?
No, it's just a regular carpenter, Stanley Fat Max, whatever. I was just annoyed. I knew he was going to tell me this because I've seen the document they send for squaring the machine up. And that's what they did when they set the machine up. Right. So the Haas, they do like the Renishaw ball bar test, whatever.
Yeah, yep.
It's got a probe. I opted for a probe. You could run a dial indicator across the edge of
the
T-slot, and it probably wouldn't move it at all.
Yeah.
Whereas this thing, and you know, it's like made of aluminum, and like the gantry is like a pool noodle.
You said you weren't going to shred on this thing, man, but you're shredding on it pretty hard.
Well, okay. So, you know what? I think that they're probably good machines for certain applications. Right. Making cabinets, signs, the stuff that they sort of market to people to use them for. And we've been able to use it really effectively. So I'm trashing it because now I can. Because we've more or less moved on, but no, I still have an affinity for the machine, and
it's paid for itself most importantly,
and it has worked really well, and I would recommend it to somebody if they were, you know, because it's all about budget.
Yeah,
and that was, we kind of spent as much as we could to get the best machine we could, and I think we did get the best machine we could.
Totally. Hey man, I love my Fidal, you know, like the new one, but like when I put it back together, so I had to take it the enclosure apart to get it through the door in my unit, right?
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And when I put it back together again, I I was like, oh, I'm not running coolant in this thing. I don't really need to like seal up all the joints in the enclosure. But I had no idea how much oil this thing drinks because it has like auto lubrication system. Yeah, it goes through
the spindle or the
all of the ball screws and the linear weights.
Wow.
Yeah. And it goes through like a gallon of oil every month and a half.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that seems like a lot.
And then just pisses it all out onto the floor because I didn't seal the enclosure. So I went around it a couple of weeks ago, you know, with like a caulking gun and some good quality caulking, trying to like find all the leaks. And all I've done is move the leaks to less convenient places.
Oh, okay.
Like so now it just leaks like at the right at the front corner rather than like kind of back under the machine where I could just put a paper towel under and
right. You plugged one hole to reveal another.
Yeah, seriously. But, you know, as you said, like despite these flaws, I still love the machine.
Well, they do what you want them to do, and you just have to fight them a little.
Yeah, yeah.
It's charming.
Get a hammer on them every once in a while. Show them who's boss.
Yeah, it's like any good relationship.
okay. on that note.
Yeah. but your machine's running well. I mean, it's amazing what you've done to get those machines up and running.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder about my sanity, honestly.
you love a project.
I do love a project, and too much so. Like, my girlfriend laughs at me all the time because, you know, there'll be something that needs to be, like, done around the house. Like, so we had – she's crossing her arms at me right now. We had she bought some storage units, like plastic totes that were supposed to go under our couch. And they're just like an inch too tall to fit under the couch.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, oh, so can we like buy something or make something to raise the couch up? And I was like, oh yeah, no worries. I'll make something. And that was like 2 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
and she finally was like, can you please make those things? And I was like, oh, fine. So I'm 3D printing them right now. It's like, like not even a second to like design the stupid risers. But yeah, this is like everything in my life and at the shop feels like that. It's like, I could spend 60 grand to get this thing, or I could like make it myself for like four.
Yeah.
So now I have a list of, you know, like 50 things that I need to make.
This is the always a struggle to do the buy versus build.
Yeah. Especially when you like, you know, you guys know that you can make a fixture or make a jig or whatever you need to make, you know, you can make it. But there's already so much shit in your day, you know, like, I don't want to spend the $5,000 on this vacuum table or whatever right. It is, but like, yeah,
I know it, you kind of, I mean, at this point we always put production at the top of the priority list.
Right.
So, but it's tricky because like sometimes you want to do a little project to speed up production, but you don't have time because production's slow.
Right. Have you guys gotten into 3D printing at all yet?
No, it's so cool. That's definitely something I would love to learn.
I think it's one of those things where like you wouldn't have any uses for it, you know, in terms of parts going on guitars for customers, I don't think.
No, yeah.
But in like, you know, stuff around the shop.
Yeah.
You know, like I've even been printing just like little, so I have, I forget which company they're made by, but they're like these gray plastic and steel like compartment drawer things.
Mm-hmm.
And they come with these little dividers that are totally garbage. Like you put the divider in, then you fill it with bolts and the divider immediately falls out of the way. Okay. And then the bolts all mix up, right? So yeah, I've just been printing the, like exactly the right size little containers to go in there as dividers.
Oh, wicked.
And then, you know, they're like 20 cents each to print them out of PLA. And, you know, printing something doesn't take any active, you know, hands-on time, really.
Right, so. And it's kind of low risk. Like, the machines aren't super expensive. You're not going to crash it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, my 3D printer was, like, $500.
Yeah, I'm into it. Actually, that is something I really want to do. Mark has a fancy printer. That's got, like, it's not, like, a filament. Or it's like a... or a,
oh, it's a resin printer?
Resin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I just bought one of those.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I forget what his is called.
They're so inexpensive, man. Mine was like $320 off Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Maybe send me the link to that or put it in the show notes. I always wanted to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I can do that. you get to say that now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly, man, like around the shop, the filament printers are so handy.
Yeah, that's kind of what I probably would do because the resin goes bad, right? You got to use it up. But
I don't know. I think Mark's enough does. To find that.
So Mark was like, he goes on like a mad dash to print whatever he could, just for the hell of it. He was printing us like this, the tool tags that go onto Cat 40 tool holders. And he made, so we had a, we took an order for a left-handed guitar that had this special bridge made by this company, a small company in the States. And we took this order and I went to go place the order. Like we took the order from the customer for the guitar and I went to go place the order for the bridge. And he was like, oh no, we don't make those lefty. I
was like, oh, and you're like,
God damn it. I already, so I, so Mark, he, I called him. I was like, Mark, help. he designed it in, he was using Rhino. He took an image of it and I actually took a part to him and he just designed it based on what he was looking at and made it lefty. And then he 3D printed it and then he made it out of brass.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So that was just like
proof of concept
prototype.
Yeah. And part of it was for fun. He probably would have just made it out of brass anyways. That would have been the prototype, but anyways, it worked great. And I have this cool 3D printed tailpiece part here. And I was like, I keep looking at it. I'm like, this is awesome.
What can we do with this?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the really cool things you could potentially do with it is you can do investment castings.
Oh, you have a puppy.
And so Nick can see my video and my puppy just jumped on me. You can do investment castings, man. Like, so you can print in material that will actually like burn out.
Oh, right.
So you dip it in like silica and then embed it in sand and then burn the plastic out and then fill it with copper or brass whatever, right?
Well, I mean, a lot of guitar parts, like a Bigsby trim or vibrato is cast aluminum.
Cast. Right.
Old, like the bridges we use, which is like an ABR1, a Gibson style bridge, is a zinc alloy that's cast. So casting's really cool. That's a really cool idea. I hadn't thought about doing investment casting with that.
The Frank Brothers Foundry coming up next.
Yeah. No, I like subtractive manufacturing.
Waste. But, down with waste.
3D printing would be cool.
I've been trying to find more uses for it for like stuff to go out to customers.
Like box shipping boxes.
The one that I've been like most focused on was I really wanted to make this like belt loop mount for my sheaths that would hold the sheath sideways because I'd had a bunch of people request that
for scout carry.
Exactly. Uh-huh. God damn, dude.
See, I do pay attention.
Yeah, sometimes. Man, like I could have a professional company 3D print them out of like nylon with a selective laser sintering, and they look great, but they're like $16 each.
Right.
Which doesn't make sense. You know, like this is just like a little add-on thing. You know, like if I was charging the customer, like it's not. But
if you charge $30 for it, it doesn't seem like that expensive an add-on.
I just don't think it's a $30 thing.
Okay.
You know, maybe it is. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But like I was trying to work out a way to print these myself. And I've also been working on the design for a folding knife. So I bought the resin printer so that I could prototype parts for the folding knife that would actually like work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the tolerances are really tight. So yeah, I keep finding uses for it.
I think that's it. Is once you have it, it's there when you need it.
Yeah. Well, with the filament printer, the materials on the filament printer are a lot more structural in my experience so far.
Okay.
So I've the company I buy all my filaments from, filaments.ca, which are a great company. They just introduced a new filament, which is carbon fiber reinforced polycarbonate.
Wow. I mean, that sounds impressive.
Yeah. And like this shit's like pretty, it's less expensive than carbon fiber reinforced nylon. similar material properties, but a bit stiffer and a higher heat resistance. So I'm actually printing like mechanical parts for this. I'm building a robotic sandblasting system, and I'm actually printing mechanical parts for it out of this material.
That's wicked.
Yeah. So rather than having to like, you know, do a setup on the CNC mill and like mill soft jaws to like, you know, and then it would be like, but the parts that I'm doing, some of them wouldn't even be possible on the mill. I'd have to like get a wire EDM to cut slots in them and stuff.
Right.
And then it would be like three setups before sending it away for a wire EDM. Or I can print them in 3 hours on the printer and the total cost is like $4.
Right.
Like, it just blows my mind.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, super awesome. Well, I don't know. I feel like that's a show.
Damn, I feel like we could keep going.
We could, but I think...
Yeah, no, an hour.
I don't know. It's perfect. I feel like I want to have you back, though. I don't know whether you're willing, but I would love to have you back, buddy.
Count me in.
All right. Well, if that's good news. I like that. So, yeah, we can keep going next time, then.
All right. Sounds good, buddy.
All right, man. Well, it was awesome to hear from you, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about what the story is with the Haas. Go and get those airlines installed next tonight, man. So
I am doing it. Well, it's what they're installing airlines. I always I'm missing one like reducer or something, you know.
Oh,
it's always the case. I think I got it, but anyways, thank you for letting me come on your show and
of course
blather man. About what I'm up to.
You guys work hard, man. I like, fuck, what time were you at work this morning, bud?
8:45.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So for people listening, it's almost 7:45 p.m. now. So that's like going on an 11-hour day for you already.
Yeah, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, Tim and I work late.
Right.
So we can work until, I mean, that's just the way we sort of set it up with our families. So I try to take advantage of them. I'll work until, like, last week we worked until like 3 in the morning. You know, and it's like sometimes it's the only time you get to do stuff like airlines or random little things. Yeah. But when, I mean, we love what we do, and it's like it's our shop. We like being here. So
yeah, no, that's okay. I love it too. I've done too many of those nights now.
For sure,
I'm trying to not do them.
That's good. I mean, that's the goal. And yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
the problem is I've conditioned myself to be a workaholic. So even on my days off, I'm still like thinking about work. You know?
I know. Well, I'm trying look to, at like, you. You're always in the shop on weekends and stuff.
Yeah. I'm trying to do it less now. I'm going to be implementing days that I'm not allowed to be in the shop or working on shop things.
Yeah. I have that too. It's like Christmas. New Year's Eve.
Yeah. I meant every week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
Okay.
Well, it was awesome catching up with you.
Likewise.
And we'll speak to you next week then, I guess, by the sound of it.
I'm into it.
So as you heard, this was actually a test episode with Nick and myself. Nick wanted to see whether he enjoyed the process of recording the podcast and whether he wanted to keep doing it, and he did. So Nick is going to be my new co-host, and we will be recording episodes weekly going forward. And we're both really looking forward to it. So we will be seeing you guys next week. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.